Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Executive Council of the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska is reviewing misconduct accusations made against its president, Chathlaish Richard Peterson. That's according to the tribe's first vice president, Cassine Jacqueline Peda, in an email sent to staff earlier this week. The review comes after a former fiancé of Peterson made accusations of abuse on social media late last month. Those posts circulated widely online this week. Peda confirmed in an email to staff that the tribe's executive council was aware of the accusations and taking the matter, quote, very seriously, unquote. The tribe's spokesperson says Peterson is on personal leave and is anticipated to return sometime next week. Peda is serving as active president in his absence. As of Friday afternoon, no official charges have been filed against Peterson. He has been president of the tribe since 2014. Tlingit and Haida is Southeast Alaska's largest tribal government. And Juneau's annual glacial outburst flood is expected soon. Follow coverage from KTOO on the radio, online, and on TV. Visit ktoo.org/flood to find emergency resources and the latest updates, along with resources and advice on how residents should prepare ahead of the flood. As the river rises, tune in to 104.3 FM and 360 TV for live public safety updates, including emergency alerts and evacuation orders. And now a quick look at weather today. It is 57 degrees out and rainy in downtown Juneau. Tonight, rain with a low of around 56 degrees. Tomorrow will also be rainy with a high near 60. This is KTOO. Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Juneau City and tribal officials announced a preemptive disaster declaration today in anticipation of the glacial outburst flood expected to hit the Mendenhall Valley soon. Cassine Jacqueline Peda is the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska's first vice president. At a press briefing, she said declaring a disaster before the flood could expedite recovery efforts, such as financial aid applications with the state.
So being ahead of the curve really makes a big difference.
The tribe has already ratified the declaration, and the Juneau Assembly will hold a special meeting next Friday at noon to do the same. The city and tribe have ramped up their communication with the public ahead of this year's flood compared to previous years. Ashley Heimbigner is the city's communication and engagement director. She says that's a response to feedback from the public.
For better or worse, we've had folks that lived through this last year, and they knew what information our residents were looking for, where we were lacking in terms of quick response with that information, and so it gave us sort of a workbook of how to do better this year.
Nicole Farron is the warning coordinator meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau. She says that Suicide Basin, the glacial lake that will release the flood, is nearly full.
Based on recent mapping by UAS that were up there just a couple days ago, it has about 15 feet before it will be actually overtopping.
She says that in the past, it has taken between 1 and 6 days for the flood to release out of Suicide Basin after water flows out over the top of Mendenhall Glacier. All agencies are on high alert because the basin can release at any time, no matter how full. And Juneau's homeless shelter is reducing its services due to what staff say is a deteriorating and unsafe environment in the neighborhood. The shelter has seen an increase in homeless people camping nearby compared to other years. And as KTOO reports, shelter officials say the closure may cut down on campers and chaos. In a letter shared with patrons this week, Glory Hall Executive Director Kaya Quinto said the Glory Hall Homeless Shelter will stop offering daytime services, including meals, to people who are not sleeping there. Quinto says continuing assaults, a lack of security, criminal activity, and general chaos are some of the reasons for the decision. She says the decision to reduce access to the shelter's services was not an easy one, but necessary for the safety of staff, patrons, and neighbors.
I mean, the situation around the neighborhood is pretty untenable right now. So it's just really important that we focus on keeping as peaceful of an environment as we can.
Quinto says patrons will still be able to receive services inside the facility during office hours after the changes go into effect later this month, but their time inside will be limited to when they are actively meeting with service providers. She says she can't say how long the reductions will last, but hopes it won't be permanent. She says the current situation is affecting her staff's mental health and well-being.
Yeah, I mean, it's having a major toll. It's hard to recruit and keep staff when every other employer can provide better and safer working conditions. And this job is hard enough.
The announcement comes just days after the Juneau Assembly narrowly rejected a plan to create a shelter safety zone that would have tightened restrictions on camping in the area around the shelter. Shelter staff, patrons, and neighbors asked the Assembly for the safety zone. This summer, the shelter has seen an increase in camping nearby. That's in part due to the closure of the city-run campground near downtown 2 years ago. City leaders say the shelter safety zone was intended to increase protection for staff and people using the shelter services. But assembly members who voted down the plan argued it would only be a stopgap solution for the larger issue of homelessness in Juneau. This is Assemblymember Neil Steininger.
I just can't see how it takes us forward as a community on this issue more than just whack-a-mole on the next piece of the problem.
Earlier this week, the Assembly asked the city to look into other potential safety measures for the Teal Street area, like hiring private security to patrol the area or establishing a city-sanctioned summer shelter. Brittany Fear was outside the shelter on her lunch break Thursday afternoon. She was sitting with her friends by one of the more than a dozen tents that line the sidewalk on Teal Street. She says it seems like there's a lot more people camping around the area and in need of the shelter services than in previous years.
There are definitely more people, like bodies, as far as people walking around, people crossing the road, which is always scary.
She says that uptick in people might be adding to the increase in issues staff say they're seeing, though Fear worries that the changes to services will only add to the chaos.
That, you know, closing a door doesn't make the problem go away.
Until the problem does go away, the shelter is working with partner agencies to establish a meal program at an alternative site. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson. And the community of Metlakatla sued the state of Alaska 5 years ago yesterday. Metlakatla Indian community asserts the way the state manages commercial fishing infringes on the rights guaranteed to it by Congress. The tribe has notched some important wins, and a trial was scheduled for this summer. But now that's on hold, and as Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, other Southeast Alaska tribes are now asking the judge to throw out the case.
Metlakatla says the 1891 federal law that created the Annette Islands Reserve includes an implicit right to fish outside its boundaries. And they say the state's commercial fishing rules infringe on that right. A federal appeals court agreed, saying the state's limited entry system is, quote, incompatible with Metlakatla's federally guaranteed fishing rights. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sent the case back to a lower court to determine where Metlakatla's fishermen should be allowed to fish without state permits. A trial was set to begin later this month. But now the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, along with tribes in other Southeast communities, is asking a federal judge to dismiss the case. Attorneys for the Central Council argue that their members have fished the same waters for thousands of years, and they say that the right to fish in certain Southeast waters is, quote, important cultural property. Metlakatla is unique among Alaska Native communities. It's the only Native reservation in Alaska, and it didn't participate in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Metlakatla's leaders filed the suit in 2020, saying that declining fish returns in the 3,000-foot zone reserved exclusively for the tribe's fishermen were threatening the community's existence. They asked a judge to guarantee them non-exclusive access to fisheries near Ketchikan and along the southeastern coast of Prince of Wales Island. But the Central Council says allowing Metlakatla fishermen to bypass the state's permit requirements would threaten the same salmon runs that Tlingit and Haida members have relied on for generations. Metlakatla's attorneys, though, say the tribes challenging the suit fundamentally misunderstand their case. They say the case doesn't require them to prove that they fished in Southeast Alaska for thousands of years, just that Congress guaranteed them fishing rights when creating the reservation. They say the state made similar arguments earlier in the case and were rebuffed by the courts. In any case, they argue the Central Council has no fishing rights to protect, thanks to prior court cases and the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And Metlakatla's attorneys say tribal members will still abide by other state fishing regulations like openers, closings, gear restrictions, and the like. It'll be up to Federal District Judge Sharon Gleason to decide whether the case can proceed. Oral arguments are scheduled for September 22nd in Juneau. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And the U.S. Geological Survey is expanding its landslide monitoring efforts in southeast Alaska. The goal is to develop an emergency alert system down the line. Data from Juneau's Mount Roberts went online last month. Dennis Staley leads the Alaska Landslide Hazard Project at USGS. He says that even though people in southeast Alaska die from landslides, there aren't forecasts for them. And it's because the science just isn't there yet.
We're trying to understand the hydrometeorological conditions that make landslides.
In Juneau, Staley says his team chose research sites on the northwest and southwest slopes of Mount Roberts, partly due to the danger posed to the downtown area. Numerous recent and historic landslides have struck the town, including one in 1936 that killed 15 people. The agency's end goal is to build a model that can use weather forecasts to reliably predict when slopes are likely to be unstable, then warn those who live beneath them. But Staley says it will take years to amass a large enough data set for a good model. The team deployed several sensors on the mountain to gather the data. The first measures rain and snow. The others are buried in the ground to measure three main factors in the soil: saturation, cohesion, and the water pressure between soil particles. The data will help the USGS measure how strong the slope is and how that changes during storms. Even after scientists make the models, Staley says they won't be able to anticipate precisely where the land will give way.
Locally, there could be tremendous variability in the way soil responds to introduction of water, even at very short distances.
So far, the USGS has established research sites in Juneau and Sitka. Staley plans to add another southeast Alaska community this fall. And now a quick look at weather today. It is 57 degrees out right now and overcast. Tonight, rain with a low of around 56 degrees. And tomorrow, rain with a high near 60. You're listening to KTOO. Thank you so much for tuning in.